I guess we can go ahead and get started and just flip the script here a little bit and talk about safeguards and trust initially. So go ahead and start the recording. I see it's been unpaused. Welcome, everyone, to
John, binary meetings. Just as a heads I just want to let you know that at 8:30 I need to dash off for some other commitment. Just so you know my timing.
Oh, well, that's a good way.
Message,
then we're flipping the script anyway, then.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, good. So is there anyone that's on the phone that's not in the Adobe room? And has there been any changes to anybody's statement of interest? Okay, then without further ado, I guess what I'm going to do is the idea here is to begin talking about recommendations, and we don't need to make them just for the sake of making them. We know that one of our biggest recommendations is going to be around data, but the extent to which we revealed issues that should be addressed either by staff, by the board, or by the PD subsequent procedures PDP, we're going to try to reach some consensus on those recommendations so that the drafting team that convenes here very shortly in the next 2 weeks is armed with the consensus views on that aspect of the report. So what I guess I'd like to do is hand the discussion over to Laureen while we have her to talk about and lead the discussion on whether or not things have bubbled to the surface and the recommendations that were made by the folks in their templates. So Laureen, why don't you take it away?
Okay, then I think what's actually going to be most helpful is instead of having these, the paper on the screen actually is not going to get down to the level of detail that we need. And what I think actually, starting with the technical safeguards, I see Calvin's on the screen, which is good. What would be helpful is to have Calvin's latest version of his discussion paper up so that we can discuss the recommendations that Calvin has made. Calvin, does that sound like a good plan?
Hi, guys. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah, just joined the meeting now. My recommendations in the there were some questions about it in Hyderabad, I believe. See, what's the thing there? Right, that's the latest one, yeah. Sorry, I'm just going to get my head around things. Yeah, we were talking about, I mentioned, consider the effectiveness of the monitoring of the safeguards as well as the cost-benefit relationships of the safeguards and whether whose accuracy reporting system might point to whether effectiveness of the FICQ's requirements has made a difference or not. Those are the three things basically that I came up with. And I know there are some questions, if I remember correctly, about them.
Right. So I think maybe Jonathan, we can actually use this as an illustrative opportunity, because I think these recommendations were glimmerings or the beginnings of the way you would like everyone to form their recommendations, but these are not fully formed yet. So, Jonathan, what I think would actually be very helpful is for us to use this as a case demonstration to discuss how we want to put more meat on the bones of these recommendations, because I think Calvin's are substantively the right on the mark in terms of effectiveness of monitoring and cost-benefit relationship and the who is issues. But as I understand our discussion in Hyderabad, these need to be in a meatier state before we can really move from them. So can we use this as a demonstration for guidance for the team members?
Definitely, Lorraine. I think that's a good idea. Again, the issue here is to figure out if there's something specific that we can recommend, or if there's sufficient data or insufficient time for something. Are we making a recommendation for a future team? But I mean, obviously, the recommendations as they're listed here are, repeats of the questions that we're asking. And so the question we need to figure out is the degree to which we can, in fact, consider these things ourselves and make recommendations based on them. And I realize we won't always be able to do so, but we need to be specific about when we are and when we aren't. So, I don't know how, Lorraine, what you think is the best way to proceed, but...
Well, I think perhaps asking a couple of questions and then seeing if we can work this through, we can work this through together on the call. So, for example, Calvin, you raised the issue of effectiveness of the monitoring of the safeguards. What more specifically do you mean by that?
I think basically what I'm saying there is the programs that have been implemented to monitor these things in terms of income. Because most of these things are, I think, most of them were ICANN compliance issues, contractual issues. Now, has that actually meant that these things have been implemented properly as such? Hopefully that's been answering your question, or if I'm still not totally with it at the moment.
So I'm still searching for a little more specificity, and I'm not sure. I want to make sure I understand your point. So maybe you can elaborate a little more, Calvin.
Okay. Right. So, consider the effectiveness of the monitoring of safeguards. Okay. So, let me just go back to the risk paper and the contractual requirements. I should have probably prepared something like this. If I'd known it was coming up, it would have been a little bit easier. But it's...
And I'm sorry, we did spring this on you a little bit, Calvin. It's for the greater good of the group.
Yeah, that's fine. All right, so consider the effectiveness of the monitoring of the safeguards. All right, so
I guess what I'm asking,
Calvin, this is Jonathan. Oh.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, think about what a template for a recommendation might look like. It seems like it would be something along the lines of, given the finding that X, There's a deficiency of Y, and we therefore recommend Z to address it. So in other words,
sure.
There should be a recommendation should be tied back to a finding, Mm-hmm. And then it should have a level of specificity so that it's actually implementable. So, in other words, our recommendations should never be consider something. That's what we're doing. So, in other words, if we have a finding that the monitoring of safeguards is somehow insufficient or ineffective, then we would want to make some recommendation for how to improve the effectiveness of that monitoring. We should tie it back to a finding and be specific and implementable about the recommendation that we're trying to make.
And can you repeat that first part, Jonathan, just for our benefit one more time? Because I think the idea of a template is actually something that would be very helpful for everyone. So when you're saying, given the findings about X, you say, what did you say after that?
So I said, and this is just off the top of my head and probably deserves some refinement. But given finding X, we see a deficiency or excess or limitation of Y, and therefore recommend Z to address it.
Right. That makes sense. So my sense from your comment, Calvin, is that you saw a concern, you have a concern about the monitoring of the safeguard. Although I'm not, what findings of yours relate to that concern? Because my sense from your findings was generally that you thought they had all been implemented.
Yes. So I think I guess I wasn't able to get a sense of whether this was increasing, whether the monitoring was increasing or decreasing in effectiveness, or if it was adequate. Those three things. So I couldn't get a sense of whether it was adequate or whether it was increasing or decreasing. If I go and speak to the guys in our office who are responsible for responding to ICANN compliance notices, they're going to say ICANN are going overboard. ICANN are probably going to go and say, we need to, we're doing it okay. And somebody who's been harmed by something in the email, something that is designed to be addressed by the compliance issue specifically, might say that these things need to be done a bit more. So I guess I'm looking for some kind of quantitative measure of efficiency in the compliance regime, which I wasn't able to quite achieve.
So what I'm concerned about then is that your recommendation doesn't seem tied to your findings, at least not as it's written.
I can go with that.
And what I'm wondering is whether. So what my recommendation to you would be to go back and take a look at this and I think you really need to consider, at least with the first recommendation anyway, whether your findings support that. Now, if there are other findings that you have information for, I'm just speculating, but if in the course of you going through your research and investigation, there is information that leads you to conclude that perhaps the safeguards aren't being monitored effectively, then I think that needs to be brought out in your findings, because currently I'm not seeing it unless you are missing it.
Yeah. I think I'm getting the feeling that I need to go and just consider the compliance reporting and go and look at the compliance reporting a little bit closer. And see if there's conclusions to be drawn from the actual compliance reporting process.
I think that would be a very useful useful action item for you, and maybe we can add that as an action item in the notes. Because this is not just an issue that relates to your paper. I think this is an issue that is bubbling up in all of the safeguards paper, which are questions about the monitoring process and what information we have available to us from ICANN compliance and what information we might wish we have.
Okay, so that kind of takes care of my first recommendation. So I really think, yeah, that's a good idea, going and checking if the compliance reporting process that ICANN has put in place actually allows you to reach conclusions. If yes, then that's well and good. If no, then how can they better report to allow people to get to conclusions and with regards to these safeguards?
Yeah, I think that's exactly the right inquiry, Calvin.
Okay. Just making notes here.
Sure. Thank you so much, Calvin, for letting me pounce on you to be our our learning model here. I appreciate it. I know it's not the most comfortable position, so thank you for being so grateful about it.
No problem. Okay. No problem.
So maybe then we can move to the second recommendation.
Right, so there I say, consider the cost-benefit relationship of the safeguards. So basically what I'm saying there is there's a cost to the whole system of implementing these safeguards, and I'm asking, is it actually worth it? Is that a valid question? Has the benefits exceeded the costs?
And Calvin, this is Jonathan, and I guess. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Jonathan.
I guess I see this as a very well worded sub question that people are hoping that we are trying to answer. I guess that's my concern with a number of these. So in other words, do we have a sense of the cost of the safeguards? Do we have a sense of the benefit? Are we in a position to say anything about the cost benefit of the safeguards? And if we are, then that should be in our findings and should generate a recommendation. So to me, this feels like a sub-question, not a recommendation. We'll drop some
您好, 您拨打的电话正在通话中, 请稍后再拨。
The number you have dialed is busy. Please try again later.
您好,
Okay, I didn't quite get that last bit in Chinese there.
Yeah. That wasn't aimed at you. But
okay.
I hope what I'm saying makes sense, Calvin.
So
we recommend that staff do X. We recommend that the board direct there to be a PDP on Y. We recommend that the PDP on subsequent procedures adopt a procedure to improve Z. I mean, that's That's what a recommendation should look like. It should be the result of our doing a cost-benefit analysis of the safeguards.
Okay.
And again, I leave room for the possibility that it's impossible for us to do, but then we need to make very specific recommendations about what would make it possible in the future, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Right, because following up on that, do you have any information, Calvin, about costs of the safeguards? Other than whatever you might personally be experiencing because of your business.
Yeah, I really just have anecdotal evidence, and I see it in compliance sessions where people do things like complain or raise the manpower issues around having to, for example, answer all the CZDS queries that they get and so forth. Yeah, maybe the recommendation is that we need to somehow compliance needs to try and account for the cost side of the equation as well as the compliance side of the equation.
I think the issue is what information would we need to perform a cost-benefit analysis? And in terms of costs, I'm not sure we would direct the recommendation to ICANN compliance necessarily, but I think because ICANN compliance doesn't bear the cost, right? I mean, different players in this ecosystem bear the cost. In some cases, it's registries. In some cases, it's registrars, et cetera. So what I would suggest is to consider a recommendation about what information would need to be gathered. That to me is where this recommendation would be most useful.
Okay, I'm making notes again. I see. There's some notes being made on the Adobe Connect stuff. All right. Should we move? Can we move on to the third one then?
Yes. Although I would say, in the regard of gathering information, there, your specific experience, because of your business experience, I think could come in handy about making specific recommendations about how this information could be gathered. So I would say, you know, take advantage of the unique perspective that you have.
Yeah, okay. Mine's cost from registrar. Registry sites.
And then finally, this is the most specific recommendation you have. So maybe you can, while we're on the phone, and I'm only here for one other minute, and then I have to give my apologies and leave folks in Drew's more than able hands. But here you have a very specific recommendation about the WHO is accuracy reporting system, and the whether that could shed light on the effectiveness of the thick WHO is requirements. Here again, I think you you need to tie it to your findings. And, but here I think you actually do have some findings. And this recommendation, could, I think, more than any of the others, can fit into the template that, that Jonathan has recommended.
Okay. Yeah, then before you go, has anyone got anything from my paper in terms of recommendations that, that I might have missed?
Well, you do have this addition on specification 6 about procedures for handling complaints not being tested. It seems to me that that flags a recommendation about perhaps testing that. You know, that strikes me as something that you flagged in your paper, but you don't have a recommendation about.
Yes, I put that in. That's right. I put that in after I did my recommendation. So then, to the person who complains that his is not tested. Yeah, no, that's true because I did that after I did the recommendation. So I must update my recommendations to include my answer to F. Okay, making notes
Calvin,
there.
Yes, Calvin, this is Drew. I don't know if this would be directly applicable, but I was wondering, with your going along with the sick who is recommendation, and just who is in general, the fact that registries will often do query limits to such a degree that it actually becomes hard to, you know, do bulk queries, and therefore I would think would be kind of hard to monitor compliance. Does that tie in at all to this, do you think, or do you know much about where you could get data for that? I just know that in my own line of work I experience rate limiting, and I have to imagine ICANN would too, then, if they're not relying on internal WHOIS records for monitoring compliance, but are actually trying to ping the registries.
Okay, let me just try and restate that because you were a bit indistinct there, and I just want to see if I've got the right end of the stick. So you're basically saying does the fact that the registries do rate limiting on their WHOIS services mean that people who require that information are disenfranchised or inconvenienced in any way?
Well, I'm thinking specifically in the scenario where ICANN is the user of WHOIS. So if ICANN needed to check, wanted to do WHOIS validation and wanted specifically with regard to some of the things you have in your paper, wanted to check to make sure WHOIS records were sick when they needed to be and whatnot. I'm wondering if they're trying to do a bunch of bulk queries, if that rate limiting is going to affect their ability to actually monitor registries for compliance. Because they're going to do more queries than, you know, your average user who, sure, maybe will do a couple WHOIS queries, but at that rate limiting probably wouldn't really affect them one way or another and disadvantage them. But I would think that some of the intense rate limiting could actually inhibit ICANN from being able to do its job. And I was wondering if you've been able to, if you know of where we could get data on that one way or another, or if that's something you've thought about.
Okay, it's not something I have thought about, but I can instantly go to some personal experience that we've had with rate limiting on the the COSA side of things. What would often happen is when you implement rate limiting, it's a catch-all, and this would hit people who we might not necessarily want rate limited. So larger clients, for example, and their DNS departments. So invariably, whenever we implemented a rate limiting scheme, we would, as well as the rate limiting scheme, have to put in a whitelisting scheme to complement that rate limiting scheme. You know, that's just what we found out. And I would imagine that other registries would have similar requirements as large clients, where they would have to either do that. Alternatively, that information is available via EPP. So, you know, because EPP leads directly to the WHOIS. So that's another way it could be managed. So I can get EPP access and deduce the WHOIS information from that EPP access.
Got it.
This hasn't been something that I've considered. If you think it's something that needs to be considered in this paper, then I can put it in. I just don't know where it would fit in to the sub questions.
I'm going to defer to you on that, but I just thought of it because you brought up the point that many of the safeguards were hard. You know, you brought up the point about effectiveness of monitoring compliance with these safeguards, and I just thought that would be one key aspect of monitoring compliance with anything who is related. And so that's why I didn't know if that was, in fact, an issue where we might want to make a recommendation, even if the recommendation was to guarantee that ICANN is whitelisted for purposes of this or something, or maybe it's a non-issue. But that was my take, was just going back to what you initially said when you were introducing the recommendations in the paper.
Yeah, I think the best way to answer that query, Drew, would be to look at the WHOIS accuracy reporting system and see what methodologies they actually use on that.
Okay, good idea. Yeah, so then that's something we could do and have to dwell on the topic more. Okay, thanks.
All right, Drew, probably we should move on.
Yes.
Jonathan, if Margie,
yes, Margie,
Margie,
go ahead.
I have my hand up if I could address that issue of rate limiting. Because I'm familiar with work that we do at ICANN with respect to the WHOIS accuracy reporting system. We do face challenges with rate limiting when we try to do the bulk lookups for the to get the sample size for each of the reports that we generate. And so we typically go, I think it's about, we're looking at, say, 100,000 records at any given time. And so it's a much slower process because of the rate limit to gather the information we need to develop the reports. So that would be helpful. So I just wanted to share that perspective. And it's also, obviously in the new GTLD program, the new GTLDs have implemented the WHOIS. But if you're trying to do an analysis between the differences between the legacy GTLDs and the new GTLDs, the legacy ones aren't fully implementing the WHOIS yet. They're still in the .com and .net in particular are still thin, although there is, a planned transition to thick at some point. So it's not just on the registry side where you have the issue. We also have it on the registrar side.
Thank you. Okay, so then, Calvin, I recommend, and I can certainly work with you on this, that we do then look into this for your paper so far as it's related to monitoring compliance, and perhaps we might come up with a recommendation regarding rate limiting. so that ICANN is whitelisted or, you know, something. So we can, I think that might be directly tied to measuring the effects. Look into that.
Yeah. Yeah, I can sense a whitelist recommendation on in rate limiting schemes if people don't already do it.
Margie, do you have data you could get us that would just
I'm sure.
State that ICANN had trouble, something that we could point
yeah,
to?
Yeah, I can go back to the team and get some information on that.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks, Margie.
Okay, Calvin, did you have anything else in your paper before we move on?
Not that I can think of right now.
Okay, does anybody else have anything else to mention regarding Calvin's paper? Okay, barring none, which paper is next? I'll look back at the agenda.
So I guess the implemented GAC safeguards is next. Oh, what was that, Jonathan?
Oh, I was going to say the next one was Laureen, so we probably need to skip over that since we.
Yeah.
She's not here.
Then we can go to my voluntary pick paper.
Okay.
Okay, so for this paper, I still have not updated it with a further breakdown now that I've had ICANN staff provide me with new data, but the degree to which we can make recommendations one way or another won't really be affected by that. That'll most likely, because the new information just gives us a further breakdown of which new GTLDs went above and beyond with with the required picks, so maybe some of them chose to implement required picks they didn't need to implement, and so therefore those are being implemented as voluntary picks. I at least, you know, the analysis is not going to change with regard to the voluntary picks themselves, the ones that were not included as part of required picks, and that new GTLD operators either put in their applications or just put in their registry agreements. And so this paper still kind of shows that, you know, a lot of the variety, even if I end up changing the structure of the paper, but shows a lot of the variety in the voluntary picks employed. So some of these voluntary picks, of course, to me, seem to be just reiterations of requirements that were already there with regard to who is accuracy or anti-abuse, whereas others appear to be new commitments, and those seem to focus on rights protection mechanisms. So with regard to recommendations, the first recommendation I have, and these recommendations down at the bottom, I definitely need to work on and restate and want to use Jonathan's template for. But one would be to the degree that we could do, get registry operators to label these appropriately or tie their picks back to some longstanding obligation, I think that would be helpful, so that a distinction could be made. So if a registry operator is actually attempting to voluntarily make a commitment to do something that actually exceeds a requirement, then it would be very helpful if they are actually citing the requirement and therefore distinguishing what they're doing that's going above and beyond. I think that would be helpful, because otherwise, even though the PICTRIP hasn't been used, I could see situations in which there are disputes under that, and the similar language between the actual requirement and the PIC end up coming into play in a confusing way. And then also, there was a PIC operator, I believe it was Donuts, but I'd have to go back and scour through this information. But basically, they reserved the right to unilaterally withdraw their PICs at any time. And so, Jordan says it is Donuts. And so I don't see how that, if that's possible, I don't see how then it's truly a commit being made in this sense, something that belongs in a registry agreement. Because the registry agreement then is something that they're bound by and something that then they must comply with, and then the picture is the compliance mechanism through which they must comply with that. So then if at any point they could just stop doing the commitment unilaterally, and there conceivably could have been registrants who would have been relying upon that commitment, then I think that is problematic, because then that's kind of sidestepping this PICTRIP process and this compliance process and the whole theory behind making the commitment. So I know I need to reword that a bit, but that's something where I believe that should be one of our recommendations. So I would love to get feedback on that, because I'm sure there might be a good argument against making that a recommendation. So does anybody have any thoughts on those two things, the labeling, or at least referencing back to requirements if something is related, and then the barring the ability to unilaterally just stop doing a commitment?
Drew, I will say that John pulled me aside in Hyderabad and expressed frustration that somehow they were being highlighted for their escape clause as opposed to all the things that they were doing proactively to be helpful. And I don't know the best way to address that, because I'm not sure that the concern is any different, right? That if I've come to rely on something you're committing to and you can remove it, he just sort of described that as legalese and didn't have any intention to change those commitments. But I do want to pass on that he expressed some frustration that somehow he was being singled out as being deficient somehow, when in reality they were going well beyond what others were doing. And so I just wanted to pass that on, and I don't know how to translate that into a recommendation necessarily, and I don't think it changes the nature of your concern, but that was John's comment to me.
Thank you. In concluding with the analysis of this, of the PICs I've looked at, on the one hand, he is correct. They have, from what I've seen, actually made true voluntary commitments where they've gone above and beyond requirement and come up with innovative mechanisms for rights protection. But yes, that still doesn't change the nature of the fact that, it doesn't matter which registry operator it is or how great their commitments are, how terrible their commitments are, the fact that commitments are made, there can be reliance on the commitments, and then there can be parties unilaterally withdrawing from them. That's something that I see as problematic, to where then maybe it doesn't, whatever they're doing doesn't belong as being a commitment if they're not committing to it and committing to the picture process and everything that comes along with that. So that's my issue. Oh, Carlos has something to say. He can't raise his hand, though. So Carlos, chime in. And it looks like Fabio might have something.
Yes, thank you. I don't know what's going on with my hand. I raise it, but after a few seconds, comes down again. Probably I'm in the box. one question to Jonathan for clarification, and then I will comment to Drew. Whose comments were the ones you got in Hyderabad, Jonathan? I didn't get the name.
Nevin.
Ah, okay. Okay, John Nevin. Thank you. Yes, Drew, I would like to comment. I really like your proposition right now, and my reaction to it is if about labeling, you said they made some additional commitment. So I guess my reaction to that is, okay, they wanted to make their case, since we had no clear rules what direction each generic should go. So my reaction to the labeling of these totally new commitments that are not reiterations of other parts of the application would be, ask them to report regularly if they are following and if they think that they were useful. So if they made the commitments, I wouldn't automatically expect compliance to chase them for the public interest commitments. I would go back to them after a year or two and tell them, how are you doing with your public commitment? And if they say it's a success, we're selling a lot of names, that's a possible scenario. The other one is, it doesn't make any difference, so we might consider taking them back. And then we are on your second issue, which I think is the most important that we should discuss. If those public commitments are part of the agreement and we are going to change the agreement, there are established procedures for changing agreements. Of course, not everybody has the same public commitments, but then we fall back into this process of making changes into the agreement, either between the signatories of the agreement and ICANN, or in going one step further into the policy loop and say, let's revise public interest commitments and the usefulness and the cost benefits and so on. And then we are at the stage back to our initial propositions in this review team. What are the cost benefits of everything that happened here? And it might be that the benefits of this public interest commitment is rather low, so we have to make a recommendation that is reviewed by the community in the normal policy review process. Or, as you mentioned, probably it's more targeted and should go directly into the right protection mechanism. But I thank you for your explanation. It's crystal clear. I've been wondering all the time what Drew makes, but this morning has been very good. Your point. I think we should keep it, and it's an excellent point. Thank you.
Thanks, Carlos. I really like your suggestion. So I'd like to figure out how to phrase that into one sentence. Because you have an additional recommendation, I think it's terrific, about some sort of regular evaluation of the public interest commitment, which, we could have public interest commitments where they're working terrific for the registry operator. Registrants are flocking to them, but maybe they're having some sort of unintended effect on something. I mean, I don't know, DNS abuse or something else. And so, or maybe they're crippling the registry operator, and it's just kind of good to have that checkup to where they're having that unintended effect. And obviously, though, like as you suggested, there are already means to change agreements, but maybe there should be some sort of annual checkup on the public interest commitments with the registry operators. I think that's a really good idea. So do you have a suggestion on how we could word that into Jonathan's template? And something, as Jonathan has urged us to do, which is very important, we need to relate it back to a finding. So I'm thinking of finding that, just in general, it might be that we want to relate it back to the, you know, in light of the fact that public interest commitments are diverse and potentially cumbersome in nature, it is important to evaluate, it is important to regularly, or I and correct me if I'm wrong, whether ICANN compliance would be the body, but for ICANN compliance to occasionally or on a regular basis evaluate how they are, something about how they're working out for the registry operator. Yeah, Carlos, do you have any language we could use, recommend? Okay, John, you recommend think about self-reporting. Yeah, and I think that's good, because we do have the pick drift for conflicts, so we don't need it to be a compliance thing. So what about, yeah, if you have any way to word it with the self-regulation, self-reporting, but just so we are getting...
I like very much your very simple classification of reiteration of what is already in the contract and a new commitment. This tendency to go towards right protection mechanism. And I would beg to consider some self-reporting, some self-enforcing mechanism before falling into the compliance issue. Because for me, compliance is a very serious break of the contract and so on. So I don't want to pass everything automatically to compliance. And we can work out some wording. I would be glad to discuss some wording with you over email. Thank you.
Okay. That sounds good. Let's do that over email. And I would love anyone else to chime in if you disagree with what Carlos has proposed and what I strongly agree with. But I think that would be good, so that way we're at least getting regular data coming in from those who have made the voluntary public interest commitments. So therefore, it's not that the only time we're ever hearing about them again is if the PIC trip is employed. And then the PIC trip is the safeguard mechanism still, by which hasn't been used yet, but still allows people, if there is some issue, there's already that there, so we're not, I don't see any way to make a recommendation one way or another about PIC trip since so far it hasn't been used. Unless we somehow had data about why it hasn't been used and knew that there were aggrieved parties who somehow felt like the barrier to use it was too high or something, but I don't know that we know that. So does everybody agree with this whole self-reporting thing, so that way we are getting a barometer on the voluntary picks from the operators?
Drew Jordan's hand is up, and I don't know if it's related to this or not, but I just wanted to alert you to that his hand.
Oh, thank you, Jordan. Sorry, I didn't see your hand.
Yeah, no worries. I guess I have a more fundamental sort of angle of attack here, which is to wonder whether, if we look to see whether we think there's a relationship between the presence of a PIC and a registry's behavior in a particular, so we talked about the donuts RPMs in particular, and I think donuts has implemented a number of voluntary RPMs. I'm under the impression there are other registries that have also implemented voluntary RPMs. I don't know whether or not they made a commitment to do so or not, and similarly, I don't know if there's registries that made a commitment to things on RPMs that may or may not be doing them. I guess I'm mostly curious about whether we think that there's a relationship between voluntary PICs and registry behavior in a meaningful way at all, because this was a mechanism that was imposed very much at the last minute by ICANN. I know that our registry, for example, didn't impose any voluntary PICs because we saw no reason to. Like, why would you add some contractual obligations that serve no benefit to the delegation process or to the evaluation process? I imagine there may be others, but I don't think that necessarily changes people's intent to operate the registry one way or the other. So I guess I'm just curious to see if we've done any analysis on whether there's a relationship between the presence of the voluntary PICs and registry behavior.
Thanks, Jordan. real quick, first of all, with regard to the haste in which the registry operators came up with the picks, yeah, you're absolutely right. So this wasn't necessarily some sort of, you know, organic process by which they were coming up with voluntary picks, because it was with regard to the, in response to the GAC early warnings. And so that's why some of the picks, or many of the picks, are focused on rights protection mechanisms, and many operators did that. And especially where there were words that were generic and yet they related to a well-known brand, then there are provisions in there about that. Or with regard to the Australian emergency number, I'd have to look in my paper to remember exactly what that is, but anyway, there are picks in place related to that. So there were things put in to basically calm people down and ease them, it appears, with regard to a lot of them, and then others seem to be kind of actually being creative to say, hey, you know, when you register in our zone, you know, our zone is going to be uphold these principles, and this is what we're going to be known for. And so there is still a little bit of that economic creativity with regard to the picks from what I've seen. And so, but to your point about the relationship between the use of picks and actual behavior, the only data coming in about that is going to be DNS abuse, where we'll at least be able to make some correlations there and see if there are direct correlations between those with loss of voluntary picks that go even beyond their required picks and DNS abuse. But I don't know of any data that exists or that we have where we can do a correlation between those with rights protection mechanisms and other sorts of registry behavior. And also, it'd be interesting, I wonder if, with regard to what you're mentioning, where you guys didn't do the voluntary picks, you didn't see a need to, but maybe you do other things voluntarily, even though they're not in your registry agreement. I don't know if you have any recommendations on where we might be able to easily gather some data on things like that for registry operators to at least do some comparisons there to say, hey, these new GTLD operators don't have voluntary picks, but they're doing these things that are similar to some of the voluntary picks with regards to rights protection mechanisms. So do you have any recommendations on, one, where we could get data, and two, where we could get data on what people are doing even if they didn't do picks?
Yes, that's a good question. I mean, it seems like a hard question to answer. I think what, to the extent you guys have you've already characterized sort of categories of picks, you know, you may be able to, you know, so if RPM stand out as an area where there's some degree of picks, for example, I don't know if Right Side agreed in their agreement to voluntary picks around RPMs. I know that Right Side has a block list very similar to the donuts one. I know ICM has block lists, and so I guess I would just be curious to, you know, maybe we can do this when we take a look at the RPM analysis to sort of meet up to multiple work streams where we're trying to look at the costs of blocking, for example, and identify the places where blocking exists and see whether there's a correlation between registries that have adopted blocking as a mechanism versus those that that committed to it as in the form of a pick. My intuition is that there's not a very strong correlation. I don't really know one way or the other because I've never attempted to look at this. So I think what we probably have to do, as opposed to trying to do it holistically, is pick like a, if you've taken a look at the picks and can identify some general areas that are common, we could look and see if we can identify registry behavior in those common areas to compare registries that have the picks and those that don't.
Yeah, Yeah, that sounds good. I'm just confused about how we measure that behavior once we identify who we want to measure the behavior for, which I guess we've pretty much already done a pretty good job for the voluntary pick side, and then we could do people without voluntary picks and measure their behavior, and we could easily put that in, you know, just a top 30 list of new GTID operators. We can find some metric like that for the identification part. But then in terms of measuring complaints against them for rights protection mechanism or related to rights protection or something, that's what I'm trying to figure out, I guess, where we would get that data or what would be the best metric for that. And then after you respond, then Carlos is going to respond to you.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know 100% sure yet. I know that we are trying to look at the costs related to blocking in particular. And so, you know, I think what we may need to do is just identify the big areas of common picks, and then see if we have data related to registry behavior, both amongst those that have the picks and those that don't, for each of those big areas. And I don't know what the big areas are, so it's hard for me to answer the rest of it, to say what the data sources might be.
Got it. Okay. We should talk about this more over email. That sounds good. So Carlos, and then I will, after Carlos's comments, then Jordan, I think it might be time to pass the baton to you for your hour and your papers. So Carlos?
Yes, just a very short comment to Jordan's. I think that we have to differentiate. I really agree with your fundamental question, and we have to differentiate between the application process and the normal operation of the domain name. Of course, there was an inflation of picks just because they thought they might win in the application process, but I guess no application process was decided based on picks only. I mean, in the end, if some were competing, it was the money who decided. But I would pose a fundamental question in terms of the GAC advice in so far as they had worries how it was going to be used. I mean, the domain name closed or not closed, or validation or no validation, and so on. So we fall back into the picks themselves, and then if you exclude the application process, and we assume somebody won it and he's the only one who can operate, then I come back to my question: are you following the pick? Does it make sense? Do you need it? Give us feedback. You registry operator, give us your feedback of what you think. Only for the winner, I mean, not for the losers, of course. Give us your feedback. How are you implementing that? Is this effective? Does it produce more cost? If not, are you planning to drop it? Very, very straightforward. But I think it's a very useful question. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Carlos. Yeah, so let's definitely work on language for recommendation like that, because as Jonathan's reiterated with so many of our things, I think a lot of our recommendations that can help even get better data for the next review team will be helpful, and that would certainly be one. So let's do that. So with that said, I will now pass the baton to Jordan so we can hear from the competition team. That's all yours, Jordan.
Thanks, Drew. Maybe we should just pull up the general competition findings doc, because I think that captures most of our work. And it also already includes some recommendations along the way. Most of the recommendations that we've identified so far relate to just further data collection. But it's possible, as we discuss this, that we can identify other recommendations as well. Looks like the doc is coming up. So we won't sort of rehash the findings too much since we've been talking about them for a number of weeks now and talked about them quite a bit in Hyderabad. But in this first section on GTLD market, this is just the general statement that the new GTLDs represent a large part of the growth in the domain names since their launch, and that they've reduced concentration in the GTLD market. And then we have the side observation that although in other industries, what we expect to see when concentration reduces is the prices decrease as well. In the case of the domain name market, the GTLD market, we haven't seen a measurable effect on price. And there's various reasons for that that I think are not related to concentration, just our ability to measure both in terms of data sources and the price caps that exist on legacy domains. But it's just a fact that currently we don't have any strong signal related to pricing. And so there's two recommendations here. One is that ICANN needs to gather more data relating to price in the legacy GTLDs. This is particularly important if the price caps are removed. This has happened, I think, with a few of the legacy GTLDs already as they've moved on to the new GTLD form agreement, and could happen to others in the future. But in general, the legacy GTLDs that have moved over have been very low volume, and I think the expectation is that, for example, COM is still going to be subject to a price cap negotiated with the U.S. government. We may have to see in some of the other larger but not .com agreements. But nonetheless, more data there would be helpful. And similarly, we are really missing transactional data, both at the retail and wholesale level, but it particularly shows up in the lack of data that we have from registrars. And so there's a second recommendation here that ICANN needs to gather more data related to retail prices charged by registrars. So at least in this area where our general findings are that domains, that the new GTLDs are a large portion of the overall domain registrations over the past few years and that the result is decreasing concentration, our only recommendations currently are related to gathering more data for future analysis and reviews. I'll pause there and see if people have thoughts. Okay. Hearing none. I see Margie's raised her hand. Go ahead, Margie.
Yes, if I could comment on this recommendation. As you guys may recall, for this this review team and the current contract, ICANN doesn't collect price information, and ICANN, for obviously antitrust concerns, shouldn't be collecting price data. What we did for the studies was we had the price data sent directly to a third party, which was, in this case was analysis group, because since we're not a regulatory agency, we don't have the ability to do that without risks. And so I just wanted to flag that we probably want to be a little careful about that recommendation. And the other kind of thought for all the recommendations is, I understand that it'd be useful to have more data, but we need more specificity on what the intent of the data is, like what you would do with it if you had the data. Just saying that it'd be useful to have more price data doesn't necessarily help us in understanding why we need more price data and what to be done with the price data that you receive. And in other words, are you looking for the prices to go up, go down? If the prices are higher or lower, what does that tell you about competition? So the recommendation, this one in particular, and the other ones we've talked about earlier, need to be a lot more specific and measurable, so that when we get to the point of implementation, we know why we're doing it, what's the benefit of doing it, and what the goals are for that particular recommendation. So I think this one raises some of those issues.
So So let me go through your points backwards, Margie. I guess you're right that we could add some more specificity here, and maybe we ought to. But with regards to like why we want it, like the answer is simply we don't feel like we were able to properly conduct this review because we didn't have the data in order to draw conclusions one way or the other. And so, for example, you know, we would as indicated in the findings, we would expect based on other industries that a decrease in concentration would result in a decrease in pricing. And we really can't say one way or the other what we think happened or would have happened absent the price caps. And so it just makes it very hard for us to draw further conclusions about what effect the concentration metrics are having in terms of consumer behavior or consumer effects, really. And so it's very difficult to, other than having a better review next time, there's no goal of having the data. It's not to change the competitive dynamics, it's just be able to better study the topic in the future. As to your first point regarding, you're right that ICANN didn't gather the data this time. I think I heard Jonathan saying in Hyderabad, and I think I agree with him, that ICANN really needs to get more into the data business. And it could be that there's special constraints around pricing, but I don't think we need to assume that just because ICANN didn't have the price data this time around, that they ought not to necessarily in the future. Now, I understand it's sensitive, and it probably made it a little bit easier to get it from the contracted parties, the registries in particular, because it wasn't going directly to ICANN. But I think we'd want maybe some better insights into the legal concerns that you're speaking to, Margie, before we came to the conclusion that ICANN wasn't necessarily the right repository for it, since I think there's going to be a pretty broad set of recommendations relating to the fact that we think ICANN needs to be the home for a lot more data going forward.
We can provide more specificity on the legal concerns, and we'll take that as an action item to see if we can get someone on the legal team to talk through those issues. Regarding the specificity, perhaps it's something like, ICANN's contracts should require registries and registrars to, provide whatever the data is that you're looking for. So it's a very direct contractual obligation. Because I think part of the problem we had, not just with the pricing, but kind of in general, was when we went back to get information for different things, that unless it's very clearly identified in the contract, we get pushback from the contracted parties. So that, that might be a way to make it more specific.
Yeah, sure. I think that makes sense, Margie. I think that will help when we're talking about contracted parties to some degree. There are other areas where third-party data, like data from the reseller networks and/or data from the secondary market would have also been helpful. And so I think we can't just rely on the contractual mechanisms. It's possible that there's going to have to be some creative data gathering exercises or reliance on third-party data sources, perhaps. But point taken that we could probably be a little bit more specific here. I think both Wodo and Carlos have had their hands raised. I'm not sure in what order. I think I saw Wodo first, so I think I saw Carlos in the chat first. So I always start with Carlos and then go to Wodo.
Yes, thank you. This is Carlos. I have problem raising my hand. Margie, I don't know why staff get so defensive when we ask the issue. It has nothing to do with regulators or not regulators. First of all, ICANN makes a living of what the companies do, so it's in their interest to know where the market is going. Second, every regulator in the world has the same problem, and it's not the regulator who collects the prices through a contract report. I mean, all the registries can hire a KPMG or something like that and just report the average prices and the median. It's done everywhere in the world. This discussion happens every day between regulated companies and the regulators. So the regulator is not going to chase them they're not going to have security problems of giving that data. The industry reports data every day to governments everywhere in the world. Their mechanism for reporting valid data for the competition review. If there is no original data stored in ICANN, the recommendation might be stop doing competition reviews, because the only thing we're doing is making a good living for consultants. And then I have my question, if that makes sense. So I don't see it as a threat. I mean, this has been solved in all type of monopoly industries over the last 100 years without problem. I'm just surprised we cannot do it in the domain name industry. Thank you.
And if I could just reply to that, because we're not a government agency, I think we're different than what you're thinking of. I mean, I have no, disagreement with what you said, Carlos. You know, if there's a government agency, they certainly can gather that data, and that's not a problem. It's just because we aren't, that it raises unique concerns to ICANN. Not to say that it can't be done. Like I said, we have the analysis group do it. So if the recommendation is phrased in a way that it's, provided to a third party or something like that, and that's backed up by clear language in the contract, then at least it'd be a recommendation that we could probably, be better able to implement.
Thank you, Margie. But I think there is a fundamental difference between hiring outside consultants and having the long-term time series homed in some public space, as Jordan just said. I think there is a very big difference, and the biggest inefficiency we had in this first review team is to have go out and hire a company to do questionnaires that nobody answers. That's very, very inefficient. So I go back to what Jonathan said. There must be a repository. Everybody must be happy with the repository, of course. There must be a repository where we have the time series of the average prices and the median prices and the top and lowest price, at least, so we can do useful competition analysis. Otherwise, you just budget more money and an analysis group gets rich. I would like to get a job with that. Thank you.
Thanks, Carlos. Wodo, I think you were in the queue as well. Although I do note that Wodo's been writing in chat. Wodo, we can't hear you if you're talking so far. All right, it seems like we may not be able to hear from Wodo, so I'll just note in the chat he's made a couple points. First, that without price data, it's basically not possible to establish competition, and that the registrar price data is basically public, although hard to compile. It should be possible for registrars to be required to make periodic reports to ICANN. I do think registrar price data in particular is going to be a little hard to get at because the registrars offer so many sort of bundles of services, so it'll be difficult to establish exactly what's meant by the retail price. So maybe the transactional data is the most useful. Marge, is that an old hand or a new one?
It's a new one. The point about the data being public is really only the list price for retail registrars. What is actually charged may not be the list price, and then there's certainly a number of registrars that aren't necessarily active in the retail space, and their prices might not even be on their website. So it's some of the problem we had, and maybe Elisa can address this, in trying to get the data from registrars was that there's so many different bundles and ways that the data that they price their services.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Margie. And as Carlos is saying, maybe we do something like averages and medians as a reporting unit. another possibility, and I think this is a complex topic. I don't think that the review team necessarily needs to get all of the implementation exactly right, and it may be that we just say, this is an area where we clearly don't have enough data and we want the community to sort of figure out, or some task force look at both registrars, ICANN staff, and sort of the metrics interested folks from the community to get together to think about what's practical to collect and report on. Okay, so why don't we move on from the GTLD market section to the industry structure section of the document. And once again, this is the section that talks about the fact that the Stan calls them inputs of the registrars and the registry services provider makes it possible for a registry operator to operate with relatively lower scale and lower costs, potentially fixed costs, than if they had to build out those functions on their own. That points out that most registries are quite small, but despite that fact, only a single one has ceased operations, and then a handful of others have been sort of moved between have had changes in ownership. And so we have this finding that is that most GTLDs have only modest numbers of registrations, raising the possibility that they may not have achieved minimum viable scale. So far, we've seen only one failure, so the structure of the industry may make it possible for standalone small GTLDs to continue to operate even with low registration volumes. But this is very early, so we have a recommendation to continue to measure metrics around GTLD viability. And I think this is another area where we could probably, Stan, have a little bit more specificity, but I think one area that we don't understand very well right now is what the actual sort of cost of running a registry looks like, other than the ICANN fees per se. We don't have a good enough sense of what that translates into in terms of minimum viable scale or a registry's ability to continue to operate, and it's quite early. And so I see Jonathan has raised his hand already, so I will allow Jonathan to jump in.
Thanks, Jordan. And I guess this is sort of half findings, half recommendations, but in so much of the stuff on the competition side is going to be recommendations for more findings, I think. I guess this issue about minimum viable scale and the inputs that allow for it, I think, raises questions in the Global South, in that the paucity of registrations may in fact be the result of an insufficient number of registrar availability, or it's not on the suggestion list or something. It may be something we need to delve into down to another level or something to kind of separate the value of the back-end providers versus the registrars and gain an understanding where there's differences in the availability of these inputs if it has an impact on market entry in the first place. So we're making the conclusion that it's we believe it has an impact on market failure, but I don't know if there's a way to get to the notion of its effect on market entry or the degree of market success or something like that, based on the actual availability of registrars and I don't know what the right word is, placements in registrars or something like that. Obviously, when I go to Network Solutions and I put in a domain that I want and it doesn't find it, it makes 15 recommendations back to me of others that that I might want instead. It doesn't make 1,500 recommendations, right? So, I guess the question is, what does it mean to be listed? Some of that's regional. I don't know. Is there another level that we can drill down to in this particular industry structure question?
So, thanks, Jonathan. You raised the question of potentially a new, what Stan calls a project, which might be easy to complete, which would just be to look and maybe Analysis Group already did this, I don't know, whether there's a relationship between the number of registrars for a given TLD and the sort of number of registrations in that TLD. That might be a crude proxy for what you're talking about. Obviously, it's not going to capture the more subtle things like how the registrars are placing the TLD, which is probably a lot harder to get at other than through sort of observational data points.
So I guess the question is, as this translates to recommendations in terms of the effectiveness of the process in the Global South, is the availability of these inputs something that we need to pay more attention to on a regional basis or something? I guess that's what I'm recommending. Maybe that's something we take offline with Stan to discuss and see if it's something that's already addressed in the analysis group data, but that's the thing that seems to We've made a general finding, but I wonder if there's significant regional or economic differences there.
Yeah, it's a good question, Jonathan. I see Carlos has his hand up.
Yes, Jonathan, just to comment that Brian is following this issue with the consultants who wrote the reports for the Middle East and Latin America and the Caribbean, and we have discussed it with Stan, and we are hoping to get some regional HHIs for the countries that were developed in this report. So I don't know how fast that will be, but we have it in our checklist in the group that is following up these Global South issues, and Brian is helping us. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Jonathan, we'll take a look and see if there's a way to refine this around regional recommendations, but it does seem like there's some ongoing work on this topic right now. Okay.
There is competition generally. Sorry, I that's definitely the case. And trying to do regional breakdowns of concentration, That's definitely occurring, and I guess I'm looking at the relationship that we've drawn between the availability of these inputs and a decreased minimum viable scale and getting an understanding of regional differences there, and I don't believe that that's on the list right now. So I don't mean to keep beating a dead horse here, but I think that we are looking at concentration calculations on a regional basis, particularly as they might include CCTLDs, but this particular industry structure finding that the availability of these inputs, has a beneficial impact on minimum viable scale. I don't believe that we have plans to do a regional, that we're not in process of doing a regional analysis of that, but I could be wrong. Carlos, correct me.
I think you're right, Jonathan. We're looking only at some country-specific HIEs, we have not developed those details that you just mentioned yet. Thank you.
All right, thanks. So Jonathan, I do think, as highlighted, that it may make sense to do some sort of view as to whether there's a relationship between the number of registrars and the success of a given TLD, that's not regional based, but still, if we looked and then further saw that there was some relationship between the number of registrars in the region, that might help us draw some conclusions. And then secondly, I do think that there's some existing analysis on back-end providers and the region in which they're located. So we could probably, and what the relationship between that and the registry operators, so we could probably look to that data as well. So we'll see if we have more data here that we could poke at.
Thanks.
All right, so moving on. Looks like we're starting to lose people, unfortunately, and I need to drop about 5 minutes early, so we've got sort of a max of about 20 minutes remaining here. We do have this further section on parking. And once again, we're waiting for important data on parking, so this is necessarily quite a sketchy section. I see I didn't finish typing out my recommendation here, so we can talk through what I had in mind. But the observations we have so far are that almost two-thirds of, I see Kylie has his hand raised. Kylie, is this on the previous topic related to the industry structure?
After you finish, please.
Okay, let me run through the parking discussion really quickly then, which is most of the new GTLD registrations are parked. We've talked about this quite a bit. What we're waiting to see is what the parking rates are like in the legacy GTLDs to make a comparison. And then we make this general statement that the prevalence of parking and lack of ability to compare to new GTLDs right now is one of the factors that makes it harder to understand the impact of new GTLDs in the marketplace. And so I think we were making a recommendation here that ICANN should study the phenomenon of parking more in order to both, I think, better define it and to better understand its potential impact on competition and consumer choice, which is a pretty light recommendation. I suspect this area of the findings and recommendations will evolve significantly once we get some more data. So, Kylie, go ahead.
Yes, yeah, about parking. I believe that we have all agreed that this is a very important issue. So here, I believe also more data needs to be collected. Say, collect more the data to compare legacy GTLDs with new GTLDs, etc. Talking about collecting data, can you hear me?
Yep.
Hello? Yeah. Talking about collecting data, I believe, ICANN is the ultimate authority worldwide of the internet DNS industry. In that sense, we are the regulator of the domain names because we are the worldwide recognized ultimate authority on that. All the registrars are contracted with us. Otherwise, they are nothing. So, therefore, we do have the right to collect data, including both the parking data as well as pricing data we just talked about. Every regulator has the right to do that. Otherwise, they will not be contracted. If in the past ICANN did not explicitly say that in the contract, I believe that we should recommend ICANN to add those terms in the contract. Also, about recommendation, I think not only ICANN should study the phenomenon of parking, but also this is a task of our team to be done during this study. The only reason it is at this stage is because we do not have enough data to do that. So we promise ourselves that we won't need more data and ask for more data on this. Also about recommendation, I don't know if are we talking about recommendation of ICANN policy? If so, last time we had fully discussed the effect, especially some unwanted effects, side effects of large-scale parking. So I think we should include some policy recommendation in our report about what we should do about this. For example, the use it or lose it policy, something like that, in order to have a healthy and sustainable DNS market. Thank you.
Thanks, Kylie. I think we did discuss I think you had raised the use it or lose it recommendation in Hyderabad. I didn't hear a substantial amount of support in the room for that particular recommendation. I think largely because...
I'm not talking about a particular recommendation. In order to come up with particular recommendation, we need at least two things. One is, as we have already mentioned, we need more data, and we have asked for more data on this. That is one thing. Another thing is that we need a better, more... more detailed definition of parking and various kinds of parking. So after these two, we can come up with policy recommendations for that. So use it or lose it is only one example that could be for that. Talking about the support for this particular policy recommendation, yes. Well, last time it was raised in Hyderabad. There was not too many people that supported it. However, I did not hear anybody opposing it either. So this is only possible or an example of the policy recommendation. But I suggest that we should come up with policy recommendations on parking. Thank you.
Thanks, Kylie. So I think the sentence I was hoping to complete was that one of the principal reasons I think I heard in Hyderabad for not wanting to get ahead of ourselves is that we wanted to make sure that recommendations were related to specific findings. So we would want to find that – we would want to have data to demonstrate that, for example, use it or lose it would be intended to address a phenomenon that there's large-scale people just sitting on domain names, and for some reason we thought that was harmful. And I think – we do know that there's large-scale parking, but what we haven't been able to point to are particular reasons why that's harmful or that's worse than the new GTLDs than in legacy GTLDs. And our scope is really tied to the new GTLDs in particular. So if there were a phenomenon that was just identical across both new GTLDs and legacy GTLDs, it would be hard to say that the new GTLD program had an effect in that area, and therefore that would be out of scope for our recommendations. It might be a totally valid thing for the GNSO to take up on its own with regards to the GTLDs in general, but it wouldn't necessarily be related to the introduction of new GTLDs, which is our scope.
Well, I cannot fully agree with you on that. I would say, of course, in legacy GTLDs, parking existed. And whether the new GTLD has a higher parking rate or a lower parking rate compared to the legacy ones, that is data we want to collect. However, I think everybody would agree with that the new GTLD program certainly amplified that issue, which already existed in the legacy ones. So I don't think that there's any question about that.
So Kylie, I actually disagree with that. I think if we found that the rates of parking were identical across legacy GTLDs and new GTLDs, and that legacy GTLDs and new GTLDs had roughly the same number of registrations in this period, it would basically tell us that it's just that the new GTLDs continued a trend that was already present in the legacy GTLDs and really has nothing to do with the new GTLDs in particular. It's just the market trend that happens to be happening at the same time. So the amplification has to come from some evidence that there is a difference in behavior that is either caused by or related to the new GTLDs in particular and not just present in the market at the time that the new GTLDs happen to be introduced.
I cannot agree with that. Well, new DLT, because it's a large scale, before only dozens, and now we have hundreds, or about 1,000 or more total GTLDs. So therefore, I think there's no question that the new GAT program does amplify the parking problem. So I don't think there's any question about that.
Even if the
parking rates are comparable.
But the fact there's hundreds of new GTLDs and the parking rates.
Through the new GTL program, even if there is an old issue, but further exposed, then I don't think we can just ignore it. Because as long as we have found it, then this is for the overall health of the DNS industry. So therefore, I think it is our obligation to point to the problem and come up with policy recommendations.
So I'll actually defer to Jonathan. But my understanding of our charter is that it is not to look at the overall health of the GTLD industry. It's to look specifically at the effects of the introduction of new GTLDs, and therefore, unless we can tie a particular phenomenon to the introduction of the new GTLDs, not just saying that this affects the health of the GTLD marketplace in general, and not just because the GTLDs continued to model a behavior that was already present in the legacy GTLD marketplace, that's out of scope, even though it does impact the rollout of new GTLDs. It's only changes that were caused by the introduction of new GTLDs that are in the scope of our review. But Jonathan, do you have a view on that?
I believe there's no question that new GTLD program has amplified the problem, even if the parking rates are comparable. And so far we do not have data to show that they're comparable or even lower.
Right, and so for one thing, Kali, we don't want to make any assertions for which we don't have data. So we don't have data that they're comparable, and we don't yet have data that they're not. So we got to be careful that our findings are all supported by data and not just what we think everybody knows. And the second thing is I think we have to look at the introduction to new GTLDs in terms of specific impacts to new GTLDs. One of the things we don't know about the market at this point is the degree to which the new GTLDs simply cannibalize what would otherwise have been the normal growth. The growth since 2013 was something like 23% cumulatively, and that's where we have our numbers of 50% being attributable to new GTLDs. We don't know if that growth rate is, in fact, much different than it would have been absent those new GTLDs. So, in other words, we don't even necessarily know that there's been an amplification of parking as a result of there being, I mean, all there is the greater dispersion, potentially, of parking, but we don't even know if it's actually led to an overall increase in the parking rates that would have been there otherwise. I mean, one of the things we're looking at, for example, with DNS abuse, Kylie, is that, seeing if the rate of DNS abuse is different in some of the new GTLDs, and is there a link to, for example, the ones that are very low cost, like XYZ that keeps coming up? Have we seen a higher incidence of DNS abuse in those types of TLDs? I think those are the kinds of trends that we need to look at, not simply general DNS trends that have simply been reflected as the DNS has grown. Again, I don't think there's anything wrong with us noting that fact and suggesting, as Jordan has done, that the GNSO looked at the issue of parking generally. But we've got to somehow bound our own findings and recommendations around the new GTLD program and any subsequent procedures related to new strains. And I think that, you know, unless we see something inherent in the new GTLDs, we need to let it go back to the development process.
Well, I believe, well, if we do not have data, then we collect it, just like at the pricing data, okay? And also,
that's right.
So then we collect it, and they make that, make that a test, and we ask AG or Nelson or whoever, or ICANN itself, to collect the data.
And we're in the process of
also,
doing it.
Just that Jordan said that over two-thirds of the new registrations are being parked. That is phenomenal. So I believe this is not an issue that could be ignored.
So no one's talking about ignoring it. The issue is simply that we don't want to make assertions in our document. We want to only express findings that are supported by data. We're in the process now of identifying data to look at parking rates in the legacy TLDs in order to understand whether, as Jordan has specified, the proportions have changed. Because if they haven't changed, then it'll be difficult for us to make the conclusion that parking is a problem unique to the new GTLD program. And so that's the issue that we have to, or that there's an aspect of it unique to the. Obviously, we know it's not unique, but is it exacerbated, as you say, by the new GTLD program, other than simply the fact that it's a continuation into more TLDs? We're looking at that data now, so we are trying to collect that data, and then we'll have more data, and we'll be able to draw more conclusions. Separately.
Okay. Yeah.
The other issue also has to do with the effect of parking. And we need to make sure that assertions we make about the effects of parking are supported by data as well. So one of the things we are doing is fielding in a DNS abuse survey. So if we believe that one of the effects of parking is an increase in DNS abuse, we'll find that by looking at DNS abuse directly. We don't need to necessarily say that it's about parking. We can say that there's been a DNS abuse problem associated with the new GTLD program if the data supports that. So there are things that we're gathering data on, but right now all we have are assertions, both that the parking problem has been exacerbated in a nonlinear way by the new GTLD program. Right now that's an assertion. And the fact that there are negative consequences to parking is an assertion at this point as well. As you know, Stan proposed in Hyderabad a potential downside consequence to high rates of parking in that it distorts our interpretation of the competition data because it may lead to a lower rate of renewals. And so that's something that we're trying to look at as well. And so, Kylie, to the degree to which there's something specific, data we should be trying to collect specifically because you have a hypothesis, we should be doing that. But we are doing a study on DNS abuse, and Stan has made a recommendation on renewal rates of parked strings to see if there's a connection to distortions in our competition analysis.
I certainly agree with looking at the renewal rates. However, because the renewal price are very low, so that may not be enough to check about the parking rates and so forth. So that is one way of doing it. But there are other ways, including collecting data.
I need you to express this, and let's take this offline. I need you to, and we can do a separate call if you like. Express this as a set of hypotheses.
Okay, sure.
Things that you think that might be the case, and then let's look into how we might test those hypotheses. Absent data to support them, we're not going to report on them, okay?
I would agree with you, okay, anyway, maybe this is my minority opinion, just to express it. Thank you.
Right. And so there will be an opportunity for minority reports as well, but again, even those minority reports need to be confined to interpretations of data and not just assertions of fact. We're not going to include assertions of fact anywhere in the paper. Okay? So let's make sure that we have the hypotheses outlined and see what we can be done to be tested them. Even if we don't can't do it as part of this group, we can make specific recommendations about testing them in the future. So let's
just
take that.
Just to be honest, the points made in this on the screen, the things in the bold, these are most of them are hypotheses. Just my opinion.
Right. So let's try to develop some hypotheses and look into what the data would be necessary to prove or disprove those hypotheses. Okay?
Sure.
Thanks, Jonathan. It's Jordan. I think that will be really helpful in framing the parking discussion because we are starting to get some data in, but to the extent there's additional data we should be looking for, we need to know that now if we're going to have this get incorporated into the report. Unfortunately, as indicated, I have to drop off about now. I think hopefully that wraps up our discussion on parking, and maybe on the next call we can dig through the rest of the findings related and recommendations related to competition and consumer choice.
Thanks,
Jordan.
Okay, thanks. Wado, I see you have a recommendation for a study on parking. And we can certainly make that recommendation, but let's try to figure out what that means with some greater specificity. Because right now it's just out there like a kind of a boogeyman, and we're just throwing around assertions about what the impact of parking is. So let's look and if you want to be part of the conversation with Kylie, let's figure out what our hypotheses are associated with parking and what data might support that. Okay? Folks, I think we're sort of at the top of our time here. So we'll draw this call to a close, but as you can see how this conversation is evolving, hopefully the exercise of digging into some of these recommendations has helped to clarify what you need to be looking at in the templates that you're producing. So I need to ask you to go back to the recommendations that you have, if you have them, or add them if you don't, and make them specific to the findings and make them as measurable as possible and as implementable as possible. So things like consider, et cetera, can't be the basis of a recommendation, because otherwise we're, as we say in English, kicking the can down the road. We need to be very clear on what we're recommending, and if our recommendation is further study, then we need to maybe be specific about what that further study, the implications of that further study are, and the degree to which we think it's a critical path to any subsequent procedures. This is going to be a very important question that we're going to get asked all along the way. Is a particular recommendation necessary before there are new application windows for subsequent GTLDs? So we need to figure out who we're trying to make the recommendation, to whom we're making the recommendation, and whether or not that recommendation is on the critical path to subsequent procedures. So I implore everyone to look back at their documents, if you haven't looked at them in a while, so that we can have as efficient a conversation as possible about these as we continue these calls. We've got a very short period of time to reach some consensus about what we're going to try to draft up in a couple of weeks. All right, thanks. Is there any other business? Okay, thanks, everyone. Check back on your documents.